Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell at ESPN. It's Monday, October 21st, 2019. And I am so excited to have an old friend on the show today. Robert Mays of The Ringer is here. Mr. Mays, normally I'd ask how you are. I feel like I don't need to ask today.
I've been better.
You've been better. Well, I mean, let's look on the bright things in your life. You have a wonderful dog. You seem to have picked up cooking in recent years. Things seem to be going well in general. Not everything needs to revolve around a football team.
Unfortunately, I can't really ever see it with that perspective. So when the football team plays poorly, I tend to be a little bit upset. And the football team played extremely poorly yesterday.
Okay, so I mean, we can do this. We can do the bad part now, or we can do the bad part later. But we're going to talk about the NFC North today, and that means we're going to have to talk about the Chicago Bears. So do you want to lead with that, or do you want to get it out first, and then we can get to some of the more interesting and politely, kindly things about the NFC North afterwards?
I think we can lead with it. I might as well just rip off the Band-Aid now.
Okay, well then let's get it off. The Chicago Bears and quarterback Mitchell Trubisky lost quite significantly to, I think, a quarterback we both have fond feelings for in Teddy Bridgewater and the New Orleans Saints. It was 36-25. That final score does not do this game justice. Mitchell Trubisky and the Bears offense was mostly trash until two late touchdown drives that added, I believe, 15 points to the ledger for the Chicago Bears. So let's just start with it. I mean, are you done here? Like, is there anything to pick at as a possible, silver lining in the bevy of clouds that appears to be the Chicago Bears offense?
Not really, because I don't think until the quarterback changes, I'm not sure how much better this can get or if it can get any better, period. I just think that I've seen enough, and I've been saying that for a couple weeks now. I don't know what more you think you're going to get from him with more time. I don't think there's any reason to believe that he's going to improve or he's going to kind of take steps forward in areas where he really needs to, because there's just no evidence that he is. He's regressing. I just feel like we've seen him with an entire season in the system, an entire offseason in the system, and he has less of a grasp of it and less command of it than he did last year. So this is heading in the wrong direction, and I see no reason it's going to get better. I've talked a lot about what types of creative possible solutions there might be this offseason. None of them are attractive, because it's the team without a first-round pick. But I do feel like it's time to bring in someone else, even if he's still on the roster, to push him a little bit.
Do you think this is a situation where the shoulder injury has compromised his effectiveness further? I mean, obviously he was struggling even before separating his shoulder dislocating his shoulder. I don't know. Shoulder's definitely a non-throwing shoulder. Dislocated shoulder, excuse me, which obviously is a serious injury, but, you know, doesn't seem like it should impact his accuracy. And obviously there were issues even in week one and week two, even the Washington game, where I think it was sort of seen and written as like, oh, he turned things back around. He was not that good in that game. So I guess I wonder, you know, I mean, it is four games where, you know, he was injured for, I'm not even counting the game where he got hurt, but where he's clearly not 100%, where he doesn't seem to have the scrambling ability maybe he had last season. I mean, is that enough for you to actually give up and say, no, this is, I'm good here permanently?
Well, yeah, because why would we lean on the scrambling ability as a reason to have faith going forward? I think that was a crutch last year more than it was anything else. And do I feel like that version of him is probably their best option moving the ball right now? Mm-hmm. Yes. But I have no interest in riding with that version moving forward, because what is your offensive ceiling if your quarterback's best attribute is his ability to create something with his legs when things break down every once in a while? That's not an offense I want to be a part of.
Okay. So, I mean, do you want the Bears to make a short-term move and say, we have a chance to win with Chase Daniel as our starting quarterback, let's go back to him? Or is this just sort of, you know, are things basically done unless they add another quarterback from a different team?
I think this season they're pretty much just locked into what they have right now. I think you're looking at either it's Chase Daniel or Mitchell Trubisky. Neither of them is.
I was hoping we were going to go the entire segment without saying his name.
I didn't realize I hadn't said it yet.
No, you
I call him the quarterback a lot because I can't bring myself to. I think that right now there's no way to fix this by the end of the year. I just think that would be silly. I mean, who would you trade for? And would it even be worth it? You're going to implement a quarterback in the middle of the season? No. I mean, that makes no sense. I think it's more about understanding after this season ends, knowing what your long-term plan has to look like. And I do not think it's him. You have to decide after this year whether or not you're going to pick up his fifth-year option, which is likely going to be in the range of $30 million.
Oh, boy.
As my mother said yesterday, if they pick that up, I'm going to strangle someone. My mother is a pretty, kind woman for the most part. This is what the quarterback has done to the fans of this team. This is just the enmity that he has started to produce among us.
I mean, it's only been four games. Like, I can't believe I'm the one sitting here defending him, because I'm obviously not someone who's been particularly high on him. But I mean, isn't there a chance he could get better? I mean, he wasn't, obviously, I think he was being pushed by the offensive weapons and the scheme last year, but the overall end product was okay. I mean, it wasn't like he was the worst quarterback in football by any means. I have to think that.
But they finished 20th in DVOA, Barnwell. They were bad. It went as well as it possibly could have, considering his skill set, and they were still bad. I just don't understand why we need to talk ourselves into this any longer.
Okay.
It's not necessary.
Okay, so then even leaving Mitch aside, just talking about this offense on the whole, it seemed like there were so many times last year where this offense seemed to get easy gains, whether they were schemed up, whether it was scrambling, whether it was the screen game, whether it was safe throws. It seemed like there were so many times where it was, oh, that's an easy 10 yards, and the Bears can get that. When they were playing well, they can get that pretty much at will, whether it's just, the variety of weapons they have, whether it's just the, the scheme that Matt Nagy is building here. It felt like there was the Bears were ahead of the curve in terms of the offense. That doesn't feel like it's there anymore. And I do think, obviously, the quarterback has something to do with that. But I don't think this offense gets many easy gains at all. And I kind of wonder what happened there as well.
I you're 100% correct about that. I think there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. One, I feel like he is leaving throws on the field.
Sure.
You think about the one to Gabriel, the one to Robinson that was just like a simple curl that he couldn't complete. There are a lot of those types of throws. Even that aside, I think that they're in a complete inability to run the ball right now. Mm-hmm. It is just torpedoing this offense. And they cannot run the ball. They cannot rely on any sort of RPOs or play actions the way they did last year at times that really kind of gave him defined choices, defined reads, allowed him to kind of process quicker because he's not having to kind of go from one to two to three. It's just a lot of stuff combining and all starting to roll downhill at this point. And I do think that it starts with just the offensive line not being able to run the ball and not being able to protect him quite the way they could last year.
I mean, do you think the line, obviously Kyle Long has been placed on injured reserve, but I mean, do you think the line has regressed dramatically from how it was playing a year ago?
Yes, I do.
Do you attribute that to anything?
I feel like there's been a lot of reasons for that. I think that the interior is just playing poorly. I mean, you look at what James Daniels has done in his first year as a center. It's not going well. Kyle Long was a shell of himself. Even the tackles are not playing as well as they did last season. I mean, coming into the year, I think you absolutely could have contended that this was a top 10 offensive line when everyone was healthy. And they haven't played anywhere close to that. So that's the problem, is that the way I used to think about this team and the way that I used to view this team was that they had most of the other pieces in place and the quarterback was kind of the last thing to come. That's how I saw this team when you consider their offensive talent coming into the year. Mm-hmm. And that just has not been true. The infrastructure is nowhere near as strong as it was in the past. And that, to me, is the most concerning part, because even if you can find yourself a new quarterback next year, it's probably going to be a guy that needs to be lifted up by his surroundings. Mm-hmm. And those surroundings have severely diminished in quality.
Yeah. I mean, you can see throughout this game against the Saints, who granted are a great defense and a defense that I don't think has gotten enough credit during this Drew Brees-less winning streak. I mean, as much as Sean Payton seems to get, you know, the, oh, look at the schemes he's cooking up. I mean, this defense has been played awesome. They would not be 5-0 without this defense, in my opinion. But Bears yesterday, 7 carries for 17 yards all game. Mitch, who has not run, I think the only first down he has as a runner is that first third down of the year against the Packers. He has not run for a first down since, and you would figure, given the shoulder injury, he's not going to be running very much because nothing has a better chance of re-aggravating that shoulder injury than him running the football. Tariq Cohen in this game, I'm going to even leave the Sean Payton incident to the side here. 9 catches on 12 targets for 19 yards. Allen Robinson, 10 of 16 for 87. I mean, it seems like this offense has basically devolved to, we have to just put the ball in the hands of Cohen and Robinson. And as good as they are, whether it's the quarterback not playing well, whether it's not having enough sort of inviting stuff cooked up for Cohen, I mean, this just is not working as currently constructed.
It's not. And Cohen has not been as much part of the offense as he was last year. There just haven't been any sort of explosive plays over the middle of the field to him. They haven't been using him in space very well. It's just a very horizontal offense with an inaccurate quarterback who struggles to make decisions. Does that seem like a huge problem?
So matter of fact, just, oh, that's a situation the Bears are dealing with. That's not a big problem. I will say this much. I don't know if I can contribute to a fund. I don't know if I can start writing it and then hoping it sort of gets, you know, breathed into practice. Allen Robinson, for his good and for the good of the football community, when this contract is up, Allen Robinson is only allowed to play with a top 5 quarterback. So we can see what that's like before it gets too late, because he has now played his entire career pretty much with Blake Bortles and Mitchell Trubisky, and that is criminal.
He has one more year left, right?
Yep.
So I was going to say, if he was up after this year, then possibly the timing. Well, actually, when is Sammy Watkins' deal up?
He has the same 3-year deal as Allen Robinson does.
So there you go. Just swap him out. Just send him over to Kansas City. Honestly, Allen Robinson is easily my favorite player in the Bears offense. One of my favorite players on this entire roster. I've always loved him. You know this.
Sure.
Having him on my team is wonderful, but I would give him to the Chiefs. Just for his own sanity and well-being, I was like, you know what? This is the right thing to do, and I'm willing to bite the bullet.
You know he's going to sign like a 3-year, $60 million deal with the Dolphins, and they're just going to be a disaster for the next 3 years.
Poor man.
Here's
funny
the problem.
Because, you know, we talk about when it comes to free agency, I think a lot of people are under the impression that these guys make these decisions based on situation and, well, why would he go there if the quarterback isn't good? These decisions are made like 95% about money.
And they should be.
He went to the team that gave him the most money. And so I understand that this is somewhat his own doing because he decided to go to a place with an unproven quarterback, but that's not really how these decisions get made most of the time.
I don't blame him for making that decision. Allen Robinson should get paid, and he deserves to make his money, and he's great. I mean, it's not like he's struggling. It's not like he isn't delivering what he was supposed to bring to the table. I mean, he is a Pro Bowl caliber receiver. The problem is the infrastructure around him is decaying and decrepit. And that's what leads me to the other issue here, Mr. Mays, which is that I look at the 2020 NFL draft. Well, the Bears don't have a first round pick that's going to the Raiders as part of the Khalil Mack trade. The Bears do.
Or a fourth round pick.
Yeah. Or a third round pick. Or a fourth round pick. They do have 2 second round picks, I believe, which obviously, hey, that's great. And you got the Raiders second round pick, and that might be, the Raiders might have a better record than the Bears by the end of the season. That is not out of the question.
It's not out of the question at all.
Yeah, but we'll get to the Raiders in a minute, but I mean, those could be 2, you know, mid round picks. That's helpful, but there's not like a obvious path where, you know what, the Dolphins? Dolphins are a mess, but you know they're going to get a quarterback in the 2020 draft. The Jags? They might want to draft a quarterback if Gardner Minshew struggles and Nick Foles is, you know, struggles to stay healthy. But they have a bunch of first-round picks. They're going to be able to get a quarterback if they want. The Bears don't have a clear path to finding a solution for this problem. And even though I'm not going to criticize the Khalil Mack move in a vacuum because getting Khalil Mack was a good idea, you see what the repercussions are here because they weren't able to add talent to a team that was very good last year. And now we're seeing the holes in that roster pop up and there's no easy way to fill those holes.
I think that when you're making the Mac trade, you make it not knowing if Trubisky's going to work out. And you more or less say, the Mac trade and the first-round picks, the timeline for that lines up with Trubisky being cheap. I think that to make your team as good as it can possibly be and to maximize your title window, you have to make moves like that. Mm-hmm. So I understand it. I understand the logic for that. What I don't understand is why Ryan Pace feels the continuous need to trade away future picks to move up for players that he doesn't know if they're going to be good or not. I just trading your third-round pick for David Montgomery this year for a running game that cannot do anything is just borderline malpractice. I mean, that is just the type of move that smart teams do not make.
You know, I mean, I don't want to sit here and have a long Ryan Pace conversation with you because it's just going to end up with us screaming at each other. But
I honestly don't, we wouldn't. I feel like there. Trust me, I think that guy has made plenty of mistakes.
There are good moves for sure in the bunch. I mean, obviously he's done some things very well. But when we were having the conversation last year about executive of the year, you know, I sort of said, okay, well, I don't know that all these moves look all that great, and I think with a few more weeks afterwards, obviously that shouldn't impact what happened last year, but I mean, some of the free agent signings look like they've been a mess. Like Trey Burton, it looks like he's just a guy. And that's not, you know, obviously he was better last year than he was this year, and you get injuries to start the year, but you know, that's a problem. You have draft picks with guys like, even in that 2017 draft, which, hey, you found Eddie Jackson and Tre Cohen in the fourth round. That is awesome. That is a good draft in itself, but now you're looking at the other guys. Well, it's Trubisky, it's Adam Shaheen, who, I mean, caught a 2-pointer yesterday, and it's Jordan Morgan,
who's
on the football team. I mean, it's weird because you have two of the best picks in the entire draft, maybe of the, you know, of that few year period, and then three picks that look like they're total disasters now. Roquan Smith obviously has played very well. I have no issues there. Anthony Miller was a guy we were kind of all expecting to take a step forward this year. And I mean, he did get 64 yards yesterday, but it hasn't been a step forward for him. And I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of these guys where it was okay, you can see how this might work out. In a lot of cases, those moves, whether it's Mitch, whether it's the big picture, are not working out.
Yeah. And I feel like, again, the bet they made on Trubisky and the roster was through 2021. And I just don't think it's a bet you can stick with any longer. And there are no attractive solutions because they don't have a first round pick. I think they're going to have to get creative. I think there are going to be quarterbacks on the market that are better than Mitchell Trubisky. And again, the names aren't exciting. Names like Ryan Tannehill or Andy Dalton or Nick Foles. And no one's celebrating those names, okay? I understand that. But at a certain point, you have to concede that those guys probably give you a better chance to win than a guy who is playing as poorly as any quarterback in the NFL right now.
Okay, so I have three questions for you, and then I promise we will not have any more Bears discussion for your own sake. Number one, do you think the Bears will end up picking up Mitchell Trubisky's option for what that would be, 2021?
I don't understand how you can.
Because you have a quarterback who you've told yourself for 3 years is a franchise quarterback, and teams talk themselves into making that sort of move all the time.
I think it's possible for that exact reason. I think it's possible because Ryan Pace is likely going to act in his own self-interest if he's the one that made that pick. Mm-hmm. That being said, this reminds me so much of the Bortles situation in Jacksonville.
Mm.
It's the same thing. And I don't understand how you can look the guys in your locker room in the eye and give him a $30 million option to be your quarterback.
The locker room knows. Like, I don't think anyone is fooling themselves at this point. You know, last year, I think, you know, there was a groundswell of support for Trubisky. And when there was criticism of him by outside forces, the team did back him. Like, you know, there were guys coming out and saying, you know, he's not a system quarterback. He's, you know, a legit guy. But that guy is not the same guy we've seen this year. So obviously I think still, you know, about 10 games to go, we're going to get to see more of Trubisky. If he plays better, I think you'll see the players support him, but the players aren't naive. You know, they know better than anybody whether they have a quarterback they can win football games with or not. Number two question for you, Robert Mays. If not Mitchell Trubisky, who is the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears in 2020?
If it were up to me,
I want to know who you think, and if we're up to you, and who do you think is the most likely option?
I think the most likely option is Mitchell Trubisky.
Besides Trubisky. Let's leave Trubisky aside here.
I don't know. That's hard to predict. I mean, who would you say?
I would say
kind of range.
Sure. The guy who comes to mind for me, given that Mark Helfrich is the offensive coordinator of the Chicago Bears, is Marcus Mariota.
That makes sense. That's a connection I hadn't thought about, but that makes total sense.
I mean, that's, you know, he's going to be available most likely, although who knows with Tennessee's offense. He could start and get benched four more times by the end of the year. He has a connection to Helfrich. He's someone who, you know, at the very least has some upside. You would figure has some upside, has the sort of skill set that could succeed in this offense. And a guy who, you know, you can add him and still credibly say, oh, we're going to give Mitchell Trubisky a chance to compete for the job. It's not like you're adding Patrick Mahomes, and Trubisky's obviously going to be, you know, cast aside. So to me, at least, I'm not excited about that move, but I think Mariota does make some sense.
That makes sense. The guy I keep throwing out and the guy I keep coming back to is Andy Dalton, just because mm-hmm. I feel like he's actually a decent quarterback in the right circumstances. Again, the circumstances might not be that good anymore, but I feel like with the proper support in a scheme that is conducive to his success, he's a pretty decent quarterback. So that's the guy I keep coming back to. But I think for the most part, all of these guys are in a fairly similar range, and it's a range that no one's getting excited about.
Yeah. Third question for you, and I'll finish up here. I'm reading a tweet from Jason Leeser today. Matt Nagy lectures the media about negativity. Says he's telling players horse blinders and earmuffs, meaning you ignore all the negativity from the outside. He says he will not allow the media to divide the team. How does that make you feel, that the media is to blame for the Bears' offensive struggles?
It's really just high-level, weird paranoia. this is what happens when your season starts to slip away. It's not been great, man. It has not been great at all.
Well, the good news is, Robert Mays, next week, the Chicago Bears happen to face your second favorite football team. So you're pretty much guaranteed a victory either way.
Who is that?
The Los Angeles Chargers.
Oh, gosh, that's been another rough year. I wouldn't say that they're my second favorite football team. I've always liked Phillip Rivers, but I feel like this ship has kind of sailed on this Chargers team.
I mean, to be fair, if we end up with a late-game situation between the Bears and the Chargers, that is a recipe for some very, very fascinating end-game scenarios. And I will say, I mean...
Dysfunction?
Dysfunction?
Yes.
Does it seem strange that... that 6 weeks into the NFL season, or 7 weeks into the NFL season, the Bears have a nearly perfect kicker and a totally dysfunctional offense?
It's great. It's exactly what I want. And the defense has definitely regressed the exact way that everyone knew they were going to. It's totally fine. Everything's going well.
I don't blame the defense for this. Like, the defense, obviously losing Akeem Hicks hurt. I mean, Akeem Hicks is one of the 20, 25 best defensive players in all of football. Like, the defense is holding its own. They're fifth in points allowed.
The defense is still good.
They're not the problem here.
It's every single thing that you thought could go wrong in terms of the worst case scenario for this team has come to fruition. The defense got a little bit worse. The offense got way worse. And it all started to fall apart. I mean, if you were building the worst case coming into this year for this team, it would look exactly like this.
I should also, by the way, make the point that it's not a guarantee Mark Helfrich is the offensive coordinator for this team in 2020. So that could ruin the Mariota example.
Another good point.
I don't think, given the trajectory the Bears are on, that you make major changes to the coaching staff or to the front office. I think that, you know, we have to see kind of how this plays out and how they sort of evolve past this. But, I mean, obviously this is a drastically different team and a drastically different organization than the one we saw heading into the year. So I'm sorry about that, but I feel like we needed to have you on to discuss it. The good news is a rival of yours, a former friend of yours in the NFC North happened to have, by some measures, the greatest game of his career on Sunday.
He was absolutely ridiculous.
He was. Aaron Rodgers, it turns out, is still good.
It's hard to pick the best throw.
You know what really shocked me about it, to be honest? I went back and watched it last night for my column. It wasn't like it was the Rodgers where, you know, he was driving 50-yard throws off of his back foot. You know, like, it wasn't like it was the oh my God, this guy makes throws that nobody else on the planet can make and no one else has ever made in the history of humankind, Aaron Rodgers. It just felt like he knew what the Raiders were going to do on defense before the play even took off. It felt like he always had a place to go with the football, and every throw he made was pretty much right on point.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's not these overwhelming feats of athleticism, but the accuracy was pretty remarkable. I mean, the throw to Kumaro down the right sideline was beautiful. He had one where he kind of bent it around a defensive lineman to Jamal Williams on like a third and or a second and 20 that was really impressive. Mm-hmm. The throw to Aaron Jones was gorgeous. I mean, he was just putting the ball wherever he wanted to.
Yeah, and I mean, the Raiders did not help in this game. The Raiders' tackling was abysmal. There was a play where...
The pass rush was unbelievably bad. I mean, he had all day to throw.
You know, I don't agree with you. It was most of the day it was bad. There was more of a pass rush than I think you're giving them credit for, at least for a few snaps here or there. But, I mean, obviously, there were...
Yeah, they got a couple sacks because he was holding onto the ball, but there were a lot of plays where he was just bouncing back there.
Sure. I mean, I just, like, having watched the Giants for this entire season, having watched a lot of the Falcons defense over the past 2 weeks, this was better than the Falcons defense, which is my standard bearer for no pass rush.
That's fair.
But I mean, just you look at this again, and by the end of the game, Paul Gunther was just so desperate. Like, he was, you know, trying to mask these blitzes. He went cover zero on that long, with all the Scantling touchdown. I mean, it was just the sort of game where you sort of flail and desperately try to come up with a solution to stop a guy who might be the best quarterback in the history of football at his peak. And for whether it was for 1 week or whether it was, you know, something we're going to see in the weeks to come, there was absolutely no answer. Aaron Rodgers was incredible in this game.
Yeah. I mean, they had absolutely no solutions. It was just, and doing this without Davante Adams and with whoever the heck is playing receiver for them right now, that just adds another layer of impressiveness, this entire thing.
I mean, like, on Saturday night, it was not out of the question that the wide receivers for Aaron Rodgers are going to be Alan Lazard, Jake Kumaro, and Darius Shepard. Those were going to be his top three wideouts. And granted, like, Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Jordan Mallison both played, but those aren't, like, superstar wide receivers. I mean, those guys are fine. They're an upgrade on the replacement-level guys who were going to play, but to be honest with you, like, the receivers didn't play all that great. I mean, Lazard dropped a absolutely perfect throw. I think my favorite throw of the day from Rodgers up the sideline. You know, Valdes-Scantling obviously took that, you know, took that the quick out 70-plus yards to the house after Garyon Conley, who, by the way, was not good in this game for a former first-round pick, and that has to be troubling, after Conley slipped. But, I mean, this was a, you know, this was about as good as it gets for a guy who has very little to work with at receiver. And so even if he's not going to be this good, Mace, I mean, are you thinking that Aaron Rodgers is getting better within the confines of this offense?
I think a little bit. Yeah, I think for the first 6 weeks of the season, they were using play action. I think they're 22% of his dropbacks. Mm-hmm. It was 35% yesterday. You saw that. It was underthrown, but that deep shot off play action down the middle of the field.
Yep.
It just seems like he is getting more comfortable. And I think not only him, but just this entire offense. And I talked to David Bakhtiari about this. I think it was week two. We were just kind of discussing how difficult it is to kind of get over the mental hurdle of stepping into this offense when you've done one thing for your entire career. And for the most part, as the left tackle for the Packers, they were going to throw the ball 70% of the time. Mm-hmm. He was going to pass that 70% of the time. He knew exactly what he was doing. It was a familiar movement. It just was comfortable. And this offense forces you to be a little bit uncomfortable because you have to sell out on those play action fakes, and it puts you in a kind of awkward position. And I think the entire offense and the line and Rodgers kind of had to settle into what this offense is. And I'm not saying that they have. I'm not saying that this is the sign of what's going to come for the rest of the year. But I do think it's a positive indication of where it could possibly go. And even if he isn't this every single game, the idea that they were a 6-5-1 team without him playing well, mm-hmm. and this is even on the table every once in a while, is truly terrifying.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the numbers over the course of the season. They struggled the first 3 weeks of the year. The Bears game, they were a mess. Vikings game, they were a little better, but still really seemed to be struggling. The Broncos game, they were okay. I mean, it felt like they could have hit another gear and didn't. But then the last five games, the Eagles, I mean, they, you know, had two drives, I think, stall within the 5-yard line, which I'm not chalking up to anything more than randomness. The Cowboys game, they got out to an early lead and didn't really need to push the envelope, but they were, you know, dominant early. The Lions game, I mean, Aaron Rodgers had two touchdowns dropped. One of them turned into an interception. And then the Raiders game, he was, you know, this was offense was cooking. They could have scored more. I mean, it really would have been, The only reason they didn't score more is because the Raiders had a lot of long drives on offense themselves. And I don't know. I mean, granted, the Chiefs did well against the Broncos last week. I'm not sure the Chiefs are going to be in the way of Aaron Rodgers and the Packers having another big week on offense this week.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll see what happens with a backup quarterback playing against what has been a top 10 defense so far. I mean, a much better pass defense. So, I mean, it's the Chiefs. You look at that game on the schedule at the beginning of the year, and you're like, wow, that's a tough game on the road in Arrowhead. And to get them the week after they lose Mahomes is a pretty huge break.
All right, Mays, let's get to more of Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in a moment here after a break on the Bill Barnwell Show. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I am again Bill Barnwell. I'm joined by Robert Mays of The Ringer. And Mays, how sad are you that we're not getting Rodgers versus Mahomes?
I'm really bummed out about it, actually. I was thinking about going to that game. I actually can't because I'm going to a wedding in Austin this weekend. But it was game of the year potential. And now we're left with Rodgers versus Matt Moore.
Is it weird that I think the Chiefs can still win this game? Is that odd? Is that impossible?
No, not weird. No. I mean, I think that's just a sign of faith in Andy Reid and the talent they have on offense, which I don't blame you. I think that there's a lot of it.
I think Matt Moore is okay. Like,
I think he's fine.
Maybe that's wrong of me, but I think he's... I get in trouble when I do this with you. I feel like he's like the 45th best quarterback in football, 40th best quarterback in football.
Really?
Is that who do you think is the next quarterback ahead of Matt Moore who is better than Matt Moore?
That's a great question. I guess 45 just seems like a lot, but if we're talking about 32 starting quarterbacks, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, and some of those starting quarterbacks,
I think 45 is probably fair.
Some of those starting quarterbacks, I don't know if you've heard, they're not that good.
It's true. My team has one.
Yeah, I have some bad news for you. I think my team does too. I think my team has two of them, unfortunately. Because boy howdy, he looked bad yesterday, and I'm happy.
I guess it's stellar Cardinals defense.
Yeah, that's the thing. When you have a Cardinals defense that pretty much like is like a jukebox that you punch and the song plays, or what was the Happy Days thing? I forgot the Happy Days.
Yeah, he punches the jukebox. Yes.
Yeah,
he hits it. Yeah,
yeah. You have that, and it leaks out a 100-yard game for tight ends, and then Evan Ingram has like one catch for 6 yards. That's not good. That's a problem.
And again, Chase Edmonds just looking like an absolute superstar.
I'm not emotionally prepared to talk about Chase Edmonds' performance yesterday for multiple reasons.
Cardinals look okay, man. The Cardinals offense is kind of fun.
That run offense is really good. Like they're going to be top three in DVOA.
Turns out when you put four receivers on the field and you're running into six-man boxes, it's easy to run the ball.
And you have the numbers advantage with a quarterback who is extremely mobile. That's a good thing. That is a good thing. They're a fun team to watch. Their defense is a mess. Getting Patrick Peterson back helped. But, I mean, the Giants are – that is a bad football team, especially on the offensive side of the ball. The defense strangely looks better than the offense, which I was not expecting heading into the season. In terms of the Packers here, I mean, are they the best team in the NFC, the second best team, the third best team? Where would you put them after basically 7 weeks for everyone?
I think they're right there with the Saints. I think when Breeze gets back, I wrote today about how it's an odd situation to have Drew Breeze and Aaron Rodgers be the final piece of their team's puzzle instead of most of the puzzle.
That seems strange.
And it's odd. I mean, it's hard to reconcile to a certain degree. But I feel like what the Saints have done over the last 5 weeks is remarkable. I mean, it's just the amount of different ways they've found answers on offense, on defense, on special teams. They are doing everything you want to see a really good team do, just in terms of being resourceful, being deep, all that stuff. So they're in the conversation with me as well. I just feel like this is Sean Payton's best coaching job ever, and it's not even a conversation.
We keep bringing up Sean Payton. I think Dennis Allen deserves a bigger chunk of the role here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think at this point, he has to be one of the favorites to get a head coaching job this offseason in the next cycle of hires, no?
Probably. I think that's fair. But I also feel like their talent on defense is pretty darn good, man. I mean, he's a great defensive coordinator. He's done an awesome job this season. But I also think they're absolutely loaded. Sean Payton is beating teams up with a backup quarterback and no Alvin Kamara.
I will say, the fullback option play they ran yesterday was awesome. I can't take that away.
Awesome. I just love that. And I think we've always said this about really good coaches, is that part of them kind of enjoys when they're like kind of put up against the wall like this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Belichick when he had Jacoby Brissett and things like that. It just felt like he got some perverse pleasure out of it. And I definitely feel like Sean Payton is really milking this.
I mean, you remember what Sean Payton did the year he was suspended?
I don't know what you're referring to. But
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he went to go coach his son's high school team.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And he learned the single wing because that's what everyone was running.
It's great. He's a very smart football coach. Watching him kind of trying to figure this stuff out in real time and having to shape game plans around Bridgewater and not ask him to do too much, I've been really, really impressed.
Yeah. I mean, the Saints are a legitimately great team. I think they're my pick for number one as well. I think the Niners and the Packers, right in the hunt there. I'm not sure about anybody else. I feel like everyone else has pretty major flaws, but the one team you might say might be able to step up into that conversation would be the Minnesota Vikings, who they were impressive yesterday, and I think they've been impressive the last 3 weeks now. It seemed like the weak point of this team, I think it's fair to say, was the passing attack. There was the seemingly annual blow-up where you had Adam Thielen upset, Stephon Diggs upset, Mike Zimmer upset. Everyone seemed to be upset at Kirk Cousins. And then the past 3 weeks, Kirk Cousins has been great. He has been legitimately one of the best quarterbacks in football. So do you think this is just randomness over a few-week cycle, or do you think something has changed about the Vikings and about this offense?
I mean, they're using play action on 46% of his dropbacks.
That's good. That's a good idea.
It's amazing. It's everything I've ever wanted in an NFL offense. So before the season, I went up to Minnesota a couple different times, and I spent a good amount of time with Kevin Stefanski and with Kirk Cousins, and I talked to Rich Spielman and pretty much everyone there about the offense mm-hmm. and about the plan they had with this offense. Because as Rick Spielman brought up to me, and I think it was a really good point, you know what this team is on defense. You've known it for years, especially for sure. Since Zimmer has been there. But there's never been a defined identity for what they are offensively. I think they've always been searching for that. And I think they've absolutely tapped into it. And it is one that completely fits their quarterback. He has been one of the most consistent and efficient play-action passers in the NFL for his entire career. Hmm. He always is up there in terms of the biggest difference between yards per attempt, completion percentage, everything, when using play-action. So dropping him into this system where that is almost the entire basis for it was smart at the hatch of the plan. And we've really seen it start to work out now. I do not think it's a blip. I think he's pretty hot right now. I think he's definitely got a hot hand, and you can see it. He's been like that in his career, too. He can get a little streaky.
Sure.
And I think that he's kind of in the zone right now. But I do feel like even if he takes a slight step back, the plan they have offensively right now is the correct plan.
Right. It's not as if, this feels fluky in terms of, well, they're not running the ball well, and so teams are, at least theoretically aren't going to honor play action. Like, this is a terrifying running game. So every team in the league is afraid of stopping Dalvin Cook and stopping this rushing attack. So it makes sense that you're going to commit a bunch of guys to stopping the run. It makes sense that on second down, on the final drive of this game, that the Lions were selling out to stop the run, and Stephon Diggs got open as on a one-man route for a 60-plus yard completion, because if you don't commit to stopping the run, Dalvin Cook is going to run all over you.
Yeah, it really is a pick-your-poison kind of situation here. One of my concerns coming into the year was that with Zimmer in charge of all of this, mm-hmm. what were they going to do in terms of the run-pass balance, especially on early downs? And I feel like it still is a little bit, it leads a little bit too far to the running game. I mean, they mm-hmm. ran the ball 33 times mm-hmm. and when their passing game was legitimately unstoppable. So that's the thing that may give me a little bit pause moving forward. I think that if they try to pound the rock on purpose on early downs just to do it, that could hold them back eventually. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like the passing game is so good and it's married so well with the running game that it's not as bad as it might be for other teams, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, I think that in years past, Zimmer has been desperate to establish the run with a team that could not run the football. I think the best fit is more of a run-pass balance, but I think if you're going to want to establish the run, at least have a good rushing attack when you're going to do that. Like, at least that's the one positive thing is, if you're going to run the ball a ton, at least be good at it. And the Vikings are very good at it, whether it's Dalvin Cook, whether it's Alexander Mattison. I mean, it's not like we shouldn't be surprised that a Gary Kubiak offense, which, I mean, obviously Stefanski has a big role in terms of this offense, but You know, they're running a ton of outside zone. They're running a lot of the Kubiak stuff. And it shouldn't shock anybody that a Gary Kubiak rushing attack happens to be one of the best rushing attacks in football. But, hey, here we are for, like, the 25th year in a row.
It's amazing. And I was in talking to Stefanski this summer, and we were kind of both discussing how this is our favorite version of football.
Yeah.
It's always been my favorite way to watch the game. And that's been true going back all the way to the Denver days. And he told me, it was in 2009, I think. He's been on the Viking staff for about a dozen years in various roles, which is kind of an odd coaching career.
It is.
You don't usually see people stick with one team through multiple staffs, but he has. So he's never really come up through a specific system. He's not of a certain tree when it comes to offensive coaching, schematics, everything else. Mm-hmm. So he told me a story that in 2009, he was studying the Texans while he was in a graduate or a quality control system. And he said that they were watching all of the boots that Matt Schaub was running. Mm-hmm. And every single time he got to the edge and moved the pocket and was able to just launch a shot play from outside the tackle or behind the tackle or whatever. And from that moment on, he's just like, if I ever get my chance, this is what I want to use, because I do think it's the most efficient way to play. Mm-hmm. And I think that we've seen that so far. I think it's really hard to argue with that when you consider what teams like him and the Niners and everything else are doing with not truly elite quarterbacks.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, this was a game where not only did Kirk Cousins play really well, but he played well against what has been a pretty decent pass defense. Obviously, they lost Darius Slay during the game to injury, but has been a pretty decent pass defense so far this year, and did it without Adam Thielen for most of the game. Thielen had a great catch in the first quarter and then injured a hamstring and missed the rest of the game. So, I mean, it was B.C. Johnson. It was C.J. Ham catching touchdowns. I mean, it was not like it was the cream of the crop at receiver besides Diggs. And then On a short week, sorry, Maggie is behind me. Maggie, dog contributed to the show, is freaking out for some reason.
I had to kick Molly out. She was being a little rambunctious.
You know what? You know what? Dogs are always welcome on the show, Maze. You know that. But I will just say this much. Thursday night, Adam Thielen might not be able to play. Kirk Cousins versus the Washington football team. Just, I'm a sucker for revenge games. I know they've played before already. I'm really excited about this game, seeing what Kirk Cousins might do against a absolutely decrepit Washington football team.
You know what's so great is that there is so much animosity toward the Washington football team that every single week there's a new revenge game. Yes. Last week it was Kyle Shanahan. This week it's Kirk Cousins. Every single time they play, there's an enemy on the other side. That's how many they've created.
I mean, the Ryan Fitzpatrick thing is the obvious one, where half the schedule is going to be Ryan Fitzpatrick revenge games. And he played well yesterday. That was he almost beat the Bills, which the Bills are a really good pass defense. That was pretty incredible.
Yeah. I mean, that team is very, very good. I'm actually headed there tonight, for a story. So I'm looking forward to spending some time up there. I've actually never been, so.
Mm-hmm. On the flip side of this matchup, we'll finish up the NFC North talk here with the Detroit Lions. I mean, this has been a hard luck season for them. I do think they've played better than their 2-3-1 record. In terms of the offense, I mean, is this the best Matthew Stafford you have seen from his professional career?
Yes. Would you agree? I just think he's playing the best I've ever seen him play. I love what his skill set can do in a style of offense like this. Mm-hmm. And like we mentioned with Minnesota, this team is definitely running the ball too much.
Yes.
But when they are throwing it, I like the method in which they're throwing it. I like the play-action shot plays. I like them pushing the ball downfield. I mean, he's really able to use his arm in this offense. And I just think he's been excellent. Unfortunately, the rest of the offense is not really working.
No. I mean, the passing game is really carrying in this offense. And I do think it's funny that, you know, earlier in his career, I think it was 2015, when the Lions hired, who did they hire? They hired Jim Bob Cooter. They promoted Jim Bob Cooter to offensive coordinator. And I think the idea was, let's get the ball out quickly. Let's make shorter throws. Let's not, you know, keep Matthew Stafford behind that big offensive line. And it worked. It really sparked his completion percentage. He was getting the ball out a lot more quickly. He took fewer hits. And so it was like, okay, well, maybe we should have done that with Matthew Stafford. And now I find it's funny that we've gone all the way in the opposite direction of, the throws are too short. You know, he has this huge arm. Let's get the ball downfield. It's back to what he was doing really earlier in his career. And that offense earlier in his career was not all that bad when he had protection and he had receivers to work with. And they don't have a Calvin Johnson in this receiving core, but we saw yesterday, even if it's not going to be a 4-touchdown game every week, Marvin Jones can be an absolute physical specimen because he destroyed these Vikings cornerbacks in the red zone last week.
We talked all about how Kirk Cousins has been destroying people with play action, how they've, you know, that's been their offense. Kirk Cousins is averaging 11.1 yards per attempt with play action. Matthew Stafford is averaging 11.
Yeah.
It's really a similar thing. Again, it's their pass, their running game is not as efficient, and they're leaning on a little too much. Them, the calibrations are just enough off where it's not going to look like this Vikings offense, even though, for the most part, I think the quarterback is playing at a similar level. I think they have excellent receiving talent, and I think that, again, the play-action basis is there. I just feel like they haven't quite found the right balance.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, in terms of the broader concept of this team, you know, this is a team that invested in their offensive line for years, really placed a priority on whether it was signing Ricky Wagner, whether it was drafting guys in the first round. I mean, they really wanted to build around the offensive line and build around this running game. They're just not very good at it. And so my hope is that even though they have Daryl Bevell as their coordinator, what I hope is that we see them make that sort of shift to more of a play action, more of a pass happy offense, because I mean, Matthew Stafford is playing, you know, about as well as any quarterback in the league right now. I don't think he's maybe, you know, at like a Patrick Mahomes peak or Aaron Rodgers yesterday, but I mean, this is a guy who's been one of the six or seven best quarterbacks in football to start the year. So you would figure more of that would be good.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was my concern coming into the season with this team, is that you have all of this talk about establishing the run. You use the eighth overall pick on a tight end. You spend decent money on Jesse James in free agency. You've spent a ton of resources on your offensive line over the last three or four seasons. Mm-hmm. And they were not shy about saying, we're going to run the ball. And I was worried about it then, and I'm still worried about it now.
I mean, what would qualify as a successful season for this Lions team?
I had always assumed they'd finish somewhere around 500, and it seems like they're trending that direction.
Yeah, but like, do you feel good about that if you're the Lions? If you finish 8-8, are you thrilled about what's happened to you this year?
I mean, I don't know. I didn't really have high hopes for them coming into the year. I feel like Justin Coleman's been good for them. Matthew Stafford is the best version of him we've ever seen. I feel like there's been a lot of positive takeaways from this Lions season so far. If they're this team for the rest of the year and they go 8-8, 9-7, I think that's a successful year for them. I really do.
I don't agree with you. I think this is a team that has been very expensive to assemble. I think they felt like they were closer to competing than they were. Even a year ago, granted they were 6-10, but this was a team that fired Jim Caldwell after a 9-7 season. I mean, they felt like, you know, they could take a step forward, and then look at their schedule this year. I mean, they blew a huge lead against the Cardinals in week one, probably felt like they should have won that game, beat the Chargers, beat the Eagles, you know, had the Chiefs basically down to a final drive to win the game. If they get one stop at the end of that game, they're 4-0. The Packers last week, obviously, think they're going to blame the referees. So this could be a 5-1 football team heading into a 3-game stretch, by the way, which is Giants, Raiders, Bears. That's a winnable 3-game streak for them. I mean, this could be a, you know, with slightly better breaks, one of the best teams in the NFC.
So I think that's what I'm saying, though, is that they have looked good in stretches to the point where I'd be encouraged if I were a Lions fan. I think they've left some opportunities on the table, no doubt. But I also think that for a team that was stuck in the rut so just decidedly for the last, I don't know, 5 years maybe, mm-hmm. I mean, just a team that was spinning its wheels, I do think that there has been some progress. And I think that is encouraging.
I think they were fine. I don't know that firing Caldwell looks all that great 2 years later.
I don't think so either. I don't think Matt Patricia's a very good head coach. But I do think that there are signs from them that I've liked.
I would argue that if you're struggling to hit the record from 2 years ago and you don't think your head coach is very good, that's not a positive thing.
That is fair. That is fair. What kind of cap space are they looking at next year? Probably not. I mean, it's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine. I mean, right now they have like $30 million.
The classic maze, it's fine. I mean, you know, I think it's going to be tough because I think this is going to be a very difficult division in years to come. I mean, if the Bears get anything at quarterback, that is a team that can win 9 or 10 games. The Vikings are set to compete. The Packers, especially after what they did on defense this offseason, they're great on both sides of the football. And the Lions could be, if I had to think about it, you know, they could be the best team in the AFC South. They could be, this year, the second best team in the AFC North. They could be the second best team in a lot of divisions, but I think they're fourth in talent, even with this version of Stafford.
Yeah, you're probably right. Again,
but I don't know.
I feel like the actual results probably aren't where you'd want them, but I do think some of the signs have been there. That's what I would say. I've enjoyed watching this team play more than I have in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not looking forward to the Giants playing them next week. The Giants are going to lose, probably. I mean, they're not as good of a football team as the Detroit Lions, so I wouldn't be shocked if they went on a winning streak, and then they were in the wild card race from here on out, but we will get to that later on in the weeks to come. Maze, I have one more quote for you before we finish up here.
Great.
From our old friend, Matt Nagy. I have to find it here on Twitter as we were recording the show. Here you go. Matt Nagy, quote unquote. "I know we need to run the ball more. I'm not an idiot." I just want to say that I've never felt great when someone had to tell me they were not an idiot.
It's not going well. It's really not going well. It's been a rough, rough year.
Well, I understand
it's all starting to come unglued, man.
I appreciate that you're holding it together as well as you are, Mr. Maze. But if people want to check out more of what you do, where can they do that?
At theringer.com. I wrote today about Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees, and again, kind of that counterintuitive way that they've contributed to their teams or will contribute to their teams moving forward. We did the Ringer NFL show last night. It's every twice every week, so please go check that out, and I really appreciate it.
All right, well, thanks so much to my wonderful guest, Robert Maze of The Ringer. Always a pleasure to have Maze on, and also something that's a pleasure is ESPN's brand new daily podcast, conveniently called ESPN Daily, hosted by another friend of the show, Mina Kimes. It's Monday through Friday. Mina's going to take a look at the most interesting stories at ESPN in just 20 minutes. So listen and subscribe now to ESPN Daily, wherever you find your podcast. Thanks so much for listening to our show. We're going to come back next week talking more about the NFL. Thanks so much for listening.